You know, this was an extremely good idea, said the bursar, as tiny images moved in the crystal ball. What an excellent way to see things. Could we, perhaps, have a look at the Opera House?
How about the Skunk Club in Brewer Street, said the senior wrangler.
Why, said the bursar.
Just a thought, said the senior wrangler quickly. I've never been in there at all, in any way, you understand?
We really shouldn't be doing this, said the lecturer in recent runes. It's really not a proper use of a magic crystal.
I can't think of a better use of a magic crystal, said the dean, than to see people playing music with Roxine.
The Duckman, Coffin Henry, Arnold Sideways, Foul Old Ron, and Foul Old Ron's Smell, and Foul Old Ron's Dog, ambled around the edges of the crowd. Pickings had been particularly good. They always were when Dibbler's hot dogs were on sale. There were some things people wouldn't even eat under the influence of music with Roxin. There were some things even mustard couldn't disguise. Arnold gathered up the scraps and put them in a basket on his trolley. There was going to be the prince of a primal soup under the bridge tonight. The music had poured over them. They ignored it. Music with Roxin was the stuff of dreams, and there were no dreams under the bridge. Then they'd stopped and listened, as new music poured out over the park and took every man and woman and thing by the hand and showed him or her or it the way home. The beggars stood and listened, mouths open. Someone looking from face to face, as if anyone did look at the invisible beggars, would have had to turn away. Except for Mr. Scrub. You couldn't turn away there. When the band were playing music with Roxin again, the beggars got back down to earth. Except for Mr. Scrub. He just stood and stared. The last note rang out. Then, as the tsunami of applause began to roll, the band ran off into the darkness. Dibbler watched happily from the wings at the other side of the stage. He'd been a bit worried for a while there, but it all seemed back on course now. Someone tugged at his sleeve.
"What are they doing, Mr. Dibbler?"
Dibbler turned.
"Scum, isn't it?" he said.
"It's Crash, Mr. Dibbler."
"What they're doing, Scum, is not giving the audience what they want," said Dibbler. "Superb business practice. Wait till they're screaming for it and then take it away. You wait. By the time the crowd is stamping its feet, they'll come back prancing on again. Superb timing. When you learn that sort of trick, Scum, it's Crash, Mr. Dibbler. Then maybe you'll know how to play music with Roxin. Music with Roxin, Scum. Crash isn't just music," said Dibbler, pulling some cotton wool out of his ears. "It's lots of things. Don't ask me how."
Dibbler lit a cigar. The din made the match flame flicker.
"Any minute now," he said. "You'll see."
There was a fire that had been made of old boots and mud. A grey shape circled it, snuffling excitedly.
"Get on, get on, get on."
"Mr. Dibbler's not going to like this," moaned Ashfelt.
"Tough one for Mr. Dibbler," said Glod, as they hauled Buddy into the cart. "Now I want to see those hoofs spark. Know what I mean?"
"Head for Quirm," said Buddy as the cart jerked into motion. He didn't know why, it just seemed the right destination.
"Not a good idea," said Glod. "People would probably want to ask questions about that cart I pulled out of the swimming pool."
"Head towards Quirm."
"Mr. Dibbler's really not going to like this," said Ashfelt, as the cart swung out onto the road.
"Any moment now," said Dibbler.
"I expect so," said Crash, "because they're stamping their feet, I think."
There was indeed a certain thumping under the cheers.
"You wait," said Dibbler. "They'll judge it just right. No problem. Ah!
You're supposed to put your cigar in your mouth the other way round, Mr. Dibbler," said Crash meekly.
The waxing moon lit the landscape as the cart bounced out of the gates and along the Quirm Road.
"How did you know I've got the cart made ready?" said Glod, as they landed after a brief flight.
"I didn't," said Buddy.
"But you ran out."
"Yes.
Why?"
"It was just time."
"Why do you want to go to Quirm?" said Cliff.
I can get a boat home, can't I?" said Buddy. "That's right. A boat home."
Glod glanced at the guitar. This felt wrong. It couldn't just end, and then they'd just walk away. He shook his head. What could go wrong now?
"Mr. Dibbler's really not going to like this," moaned Ashfelt.
"Oh, shut up," said Glod. "I don't know what he's not going to like."
"Well, for a start," said Ashfelt, "the main thing, the thing he won't like most, is we've got the money."
Cliff reached down under the seat. There was a dull clinking noise, of the sort made by a lot of gold keeping nice and quiet. The stage was trembling with the vibration of the stamping. There was some shouting now. Dibbler turned to Crash and grinned horribly.
"Hey, I've just had a great idea," he said.
A tiny shape swarmed up the road from the river. Ahead of it, the lights of the stage glowed in the dusk. The Arch-Chancellor nudged Ponder and flourished his staff. "Now," he said, "if there's a sudden rip in reality and horrible screaming things come through, our job is to..." He scratched his head. "What is it the Dean says? Kick a righteous donkey."
"Some righteous ass, sir," said Ponder. "He says, kick some righteous ass."
Ridcully peered at the empty stage. "I don't see one," he said. The four members of the band sat up and stared straight ahead over the moonlit plain. Finally, Cliff broke the silence.
"How much?"
"Best part of $5,000.
$5,000.
Cliff clamped his huge hand over Glod's mouth.
"Why?"
said Cliff as the dwarf squirmed.
"More bottle."
"I got a bit confused," said Ashfelt. "Sorry."
"We'll never get far enough," said Cliff. "You know that. Not even if we die."
"I tried to tell you all," Ashfelt moaned. Maybe we could take it back."
"How can we do that?"
"Glod," said Cliff, in a reasonable tone of voice, "I'm going to take my hand away, and you're not to shout, right?"
"Okay."
"Take it back! $5,000!
"I suppose some of that is ours," said Cliff, tightening his grip.
"I know I haven't had any wages," said Ashfelt.
"Let's get to Quirm," said Buddy urgently. "We can take out what's ours and send the rest back to him."
Cliff scratched his chin with his free hand.
"Some of it belongs to Chryso, praise," said Ashfelt. "Mr. Dibbler borrowed some money off him to set up the festival."
"We won't get away from him," said Cliff, "except if we drive all the way to the rim and chuck ourselves over. Even then, only maybe."
We could explain, couldn't we?" said Ashfelt.
A vision of Chryso-Praise's gleaming marble head formed in their vision.
"No."
"Quirm, then," said Buddy.
Cliff's diamond teeth glittered in the moonlight.
"I thought," he said, "I thought I heard something on the road back there. Sounded like harness."
The invisible beggars began to wander away from the park. Foul old Ron's smell had stayed on for a while because it was enjoying the music, and Mr. Scrub still hadn't moved.
"We got nearly 20 sausages,"
said Arnold sideways. Coffin Henry coughed a cough with bones in it.
"Bugger 'em," said Foul Old Ron. "Oh, I told 'em, spying on me with rays."
Something bounded across the trodden turf towards Mr. Scrub, ran up his robe, and grabbed either side of his hood with both paws. There was the hollow sound of two skulls meeting. Mr. Scrub staggered backwards.
"Squeak!"
Mr. Scrub blinked and sat down suddenly. The beggars stared down at the little figure jumping up and down on the cobbles. Being of an invisible nature themselves, they were naturally good at seeing things unseen by other men, or in the case of Foul Old Ron, by any known eyeball.
"That's a rat,"
said Duckman.
"Bugger it,"
said Foul Old Ron. The rat pranced in circles on its hind legs, squeaking loudly. Mr. Scrub blinked again. And Death stood up.
"I have to go," he said.
"Squeak!"
Death strode away, stopped, and came back. He pointed a skeletal finger at the duck man.
"Why," he said, "are you walking around with that duck?"
"What duck?"
"Ah, sorry."
"Listen, how can it go wrong?" said Crash, waving his hands frantically. "It's got to work. Everyone knows that when you get your big chance because the star is ill or something, then the audience will go mad for you. It happens every time, right?"
Jimbo, Noddy and Scum peered around the curtain at the pandemonium. They nodded uncertainly. Of course, things always went well when you had your big chance.
"We could do anarchy in Ankh-Morpork," said Jimbo doubtfully. We haven't got that right, said Noddy.
Yeah, but there's nothing new about that.
I suppose we could give it a try.
Excellent, said Crash. He raised his guitar defiantly. We can do it for the sake of sex and drugs and music with rocks in it.
He was aware of their disbelieving stares.
You never said you'd had any drugs, said Jimbo accusingly.
If it comes to that, said Noddy, I don't reckon you've ever had any...
1 out of 3 ain't bad, shouted Crash.
Yes, it is. It's only 33%.
Shut up!
People were stamping their feet and clapping their hands derisively. Ridcully squinted along his staff.
Oh, there was the holy Saint Bobby, he said. I suppose he was a righteous ass, come to think about it.
Sorry?
Said Ponder.
He was a donkey, said Ridcully, hundreds of years ago. Got made a bishop in the Omnian Church for carrying some holy man, I believe. Can't get more righteous than that.
No, Arch-Chancellor, said Ponder. It's just a sort of military saying. It means the, you know, sir, backside.
I wonder how we tell which bit that is, Ridcully said. The creatures from the dungeon dimensions have legs and things all over the place.
I don't know, sir,
said Ponder wearily.
Perhaps we'd better just kick everything to be on the safe side.
Death caught up with the rat near Brass Bridge. No one had disturbed Albert. Since he was in the gutter, he'd become nearly as invisible as Coffin Henry. Death rolled his sleeve up. His hand moved through the fabric of Albert's coat, as if it was mist.
Daft old fool. Always took it with him, he muttered. I can't imagine what he thought I'd do with it.
The hand came out, cupping a fragment of curved glass. A pinch of sand glittered on it.
34 seconds, said Death.
He handed the glass to the rat.
Find something to put this in, and don't drop it.
He stood up and surveyed the world. There was the glong, glong, glong noise of an empty beer bottle bouncing on the stones as the Death of Rats trotted back out of the mended drum. 34 seconds of sand orbited slightly erratically inside it. Death hauled his servant to his feet. No time was passing for Albert. His eyes were glazed, his body clock idled. He hung from his master's arm like a cheap suit. Death snatched the bottle from the rat and tilted it gently. A bit of life began to flow.
"Where is my granddaughter?" he said. "You have to tell me, otherwise I can't know."
Albert's eyes clicked open.
"She's trying to save the boy, master," he said. "She doesn't know the meaning of the word duty."
Death tipped the bottle back. Albert froze in mid-sentence.
"But we do, don't we?"
said Death bitterly.
"You and me."
He nodded to the Death of Rats.
"Look after him," he said.
Death snapped his fingers. Nothing happened apart from the click.
This is very embarrassing. She has some of my power. I do seem momentarily unable to,
The Death of Rats squeaked helpfully.
No, you look after him. I know where they're going. History likes cycles.
Death looked at the towers of Unseen University rising over the rooftops.
And somewhere in this town is a horse I can ride.
Hold on! Something's coming!
Ridcully glared at the stage.
What are they?
Ponder stared.
I think they may be human, sir.
The crowd had stopped stamping its collective feet and was watching in a sullen, "This had better be good," silence. Crash stepped forward with a big, mad, glossy grin on his face.
Yes, but any minute they'll split down the middle and ghastly creatures will come out,
said Ridcully hopefully. Crash hefted his guitar and played a chord.
My word, said Ridcully. Sir, that sounded exactly like a cat trying to go to the lavatory through a sewn-up bum.
Past numbers, in fact. Crash was trying for Anarchy in Ankh-Morpork. Jimbo had frozen because he couldn't see himself in a mirror and was playing the only page he could remember from Blurt Weedown's book, which was the index, and Noddy had got his fingers caught in the strings. As far as Scum was concerned, tunes' names were things that happened to other people. He was concentrating on the rhythm. Most people don't have to, but for Scum, even clapping his hands was an exercise in concentration, so he played in a small, contented world of his own, and didn't even notice the audience rise like a bad meal and hit the stage. Sergeant Colon and Corporal Nobbs were on duty at the Diosil gate, sharing a comradely cigarette and listening to the distant roar of the festival.
"Sounds like a big night," said Sergeant Colon.
"Right enough, Sarge."
"Sounds like some trouble."
"Good job we're out of it, Sarge."
A horse came clattering up the street, its rider struggling to keep on. As it got closer, they made out the contorted features of C.M.O.T. Dibbler, riding with the ease of a sack of potatoes.
"Did a cart just go through here?"
he demanded.
"Which one, Throat?" said Sergeant Colon.
"What do you mean, which one?"
"Well, there was two," said the sergeant. "One with a couple of trolls in, and one with Mr. Cleek just after that. You know, the Musicians Guild."
"Oh, no!"
Dibbler pummeled the horse into action again and bounced off into the night.
"What was that about?"
said Nobby.
"Someone probably owes him a penny," said Sergeant Colon, leaning on his spear.
There was the sound of another horse approaching. The watchmen flattened themselves against the wall as it thundered past. It was big and white. The rider's black cloak streamed in the air, as did her hair. There was a rush of wind, and then they were gone, out onto the plains. Nobby stared after it.
"That was her," he said.
"Who?"
"Susan Death."
The light in the crystal faded to a dot and winked out.
"That's 3 days' worth of magic I won't see again," the senior wrangler complained.
"Worth every thaum," said the chair of indefinite studies.
"Not as good as seeing them live, though," said the lecturer in recent runes. "There's something about the way the sweat drips on you."
"I thought it ended just as it was getting good," said the chair. "I thought..."
The wizards went rigid as the howl rang through the building. It was slightly animal, but also mineral, metallic, edged like a saw. Eventually, the lecturer in recent runes said,
"Of course, just because we've heard a spine-chilling, blood-curling scream of the sort to make your very marrow freeze in your bones, doesn't automatically mean there's anything wrong."
The wizards looked out into the corridor.
"It came from downstairs somewhere," said the chair of indefinite studies, heading for the staircase.
"So why are you going upstairs?"
"Because I'm not daft."
"But it might be some terrible emanation."
"You don't say," said the chair, still accelerating.
"All right, please yourself. That's the students' floor up there."
The chair came down slowly, occasionally glancing fearfully up the stairs.
"Look, nothing can get in," said the senior wrangler. "This place is protected by very powerful spells."
"That's right," said recent runes.
"And I'm sure we've all been strengthening them periodically, as is our duty," said the senior wrangler.
Yes, of course," said recent runes.
The sound came again. There was a slow pulsating rhythm in the roar.
"The library, I think," said the senior wrangler.
"Anyone seen the librarian lately?"
"He always seems to be carrying something when I see him. You don't think he's up to something occult, do you?"
"This is a magical university."
"Yes, but more occult is what I mean."
"Keep together, will you?"
"I am together.
For if we are united, what can possibly harm us?"
"Well, one, a great big shut-up."
The dean opened the library door. It was warm and velvety quiet. Occasionally, a book would rustle its pages or clank its chains restlessly. A silvery light was coming from the stairway to the basement. There was also the occasional ooh.
"He doesn't sound very upset," said the bursar.
The wizards crept down the steps. There was no mistaking the door. The light streamed from it. The wizards stepped into the cellar. They stopped breathing. It was on a raised dais in the centre of the floor with candles all around it. It was music with rocks in. A tall, dark figure skidded around the corner into Sator Square and, accelerating, pounded through the gateway of Unseen University. It was seen only by Modo, the dwarf gardener, as he happily wheeled his manure barrow through the twilight. It had been a good day. Most days were, in his experience. He hadn't heard about the festival. He hadn't heard about music with rocks in. Modo didn't hear about most things because he wasn't listening. He liked compost. Next to compost, he liked roses, because they were something to compost the compost for. He was by nature a contented dwarf, who took in his short stride all the additional problems of gardening in a high magical environment, such as greenfly, whitefly, and lurching things with tentacles. proper lawn maintenance could be a real problem when things from another dimension were allowed to slither over it. Someone pounded across it and disappeared through the doorway of the library. Modo looked at the marks and said,
"Oh, dear."
The wizard started breathing again.
"Oh, my,"
said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Rave in,"
said the senior wrangler.
"Now that's what I call music with rocks in,"
sighed the dean. He stepped forward with the rapt expression of a miser in a gold mine. The candlelight glittered off black and silver. There was a lot of both.
"Oh, my,"
said the lecturer in recent runes. It was like some kind of incantation.
"I say, isn't that my nose hair mirror?"
said the bursar, breaking the spell.
"That's my nose hair mirror, I'm sure."
Except that while the black was black, the silver wasn't really silver. It was whatever mirrors and bits of shiny tin and tinsel and wire the librarian had been able to scrounge and bend into shape.
"It's got the little silver frame. Why is it on that two-wheeled cart? Two wheels, one after the other? It's ridiculous. It'll fall over, depend upon it. And where's the horse going to go, may I ask?"
The senior wrangler tapped him gently on the shoulder.
"Bursar, a word to the wizard, old chap."
"Yes, what is it?"
"I think if you don't stop talking this minute, the dean will kill you."
There were two small cartwheels, one behind the other, with a saddle in between them. In front of the saddle was a pipe with a complicated double curve in it, so that someone sitting in the saddle would be able to get a grip. The rest was junk. Bones and tree branches, and a jackdaw's banquet of gewgaws. A horse's skull was strapped over the front wheel, and feathers and beads hung from every point. It was junk, but as it stood in the flickering glow, it had a dark organic quality, not exactly life, but something dynamic and disquieting and coiled and potent that was making the dean vibrate on his feet. It radiated something that suggested that, just by existing and looking like it did, it was breaking at least 9 laws and 23 guidelines.
"Is he in love?"
said the bursar.
"Make it go," said the dean. "It's got to go. It's meant to go."
"Yes, but what is it?"
said the chair of indefinite studies.
"It's a masterpiece," said the dean. "A triumph."
"Ook." "Perhaps you have to push it along with your feet,"
whispered the senior wrangler. The dean shook his head in a preoccupied way.
"We're wizards, aren't we?" he said. "I expect we could make it go."
He walked around the circle. The draught from his studded leather robe made the candle flames waver and the shadows of the thing danced on the wall. The senior wrangler bit his lip.
"Not too certain about that," he said. "Looks like it's got more than enough magic in it as it is. Is it breathing, or is that just my imagination?"
The senior wrangler spun round and waved a finger at the librarian.
"You built it,"
he barked. The orangutan shook his head.
"Ook."
"What did he say?"
"He said he didn't build it, he just put it together,"
said the dean, without turning his head.
"Ook, I'm going to sit on it,"
said the dean. The other wizards felt something draining out of their souls, and suddenly uncertainty sloshing into its place.
"I wouldn't do that if I were you, old chap,"
said the senior wrangler. "You don't know where it might take you."
"Don't care,"
said the dean. He still didn't take his eyes off the thing.
"I mean, it's not of this world,"
said the senior wrangler.
"I've been of this world for more than 70 years,"
said the dean,
"and it is extremely boring."
He stepped into the circle and put his hand on the thing's saddle. It trembled.
"Excuse me."
The tall, dark figure was suddenly there in the doorway, and then in a few strides was in the circle. A skeletal hand dropped onto the dean's shoulder and propelled him gently but unstoppably aside.
"Thank you."
The figure vaulted into the saddle and reached out for the handlebars. It looked down at the thing it bestrode. Some situations you had to get exactly right. A finger pointed at the dean.
"I need your clothes."
The dean backed away.
"What?"
"Give me your coat."
The dean, with great reluctance, shrugged off his leather robe and handed it over. Death put it on. That was better.
"Now, let me see."
A blue glow flickered under his fingers and spread in jagged blue lines, forming a corona at the tip of every feather and bead.
"We're in the cellar,"
said the dean.
"Doesn't that matter?"
Death gave him a look.
"No."
Modo straightened up and paused to admire his rose bed, which contained the finest display of pure black roses he'd ever managed to produce. A high magical environment could be useful sometimes. Their scent hung on the evening air like an encouraging word. The flower bed erupted. Modo had a brief vision of flames and something arcing into the sky before his vision was blotted out by a rain of beads, feathers, and soft black petals. He shook his head and ambled off to fetch his shovel.
Sarge?
Yes, Nobby?
You know your teeth?
What teeth?
The teeth, like in your mouth.
Oh, right, yep. What about them?
How come they fit together at the back?
There was a pause while Sergeant Colon prodded the recesses of his mouth with his tongue. He began, and untangled himself.
Interesting observation, Nobby.
Nobby finished rolling a cigarette.
Reckon we should shut the gates, Sarge?
Might as well.
With the exact minimum amount of effort, they swung the huge gates together. It wasn't much of a precaution. The keys had been lost a long time ago. Even the sign, "Thank you for not invading our city," was barely readable now.
I reckon we should...
Colon began, and then peered down the street.
What's that light?
He said.
And what's that making that noise?
Blue light glittered on the buildings at the end of the long street.
Sounds like some kind of wild animal,
said Corporal Nobbs. The light resolved itself into two actinic blue lances. Colon shaded his eyes.
Looks like some kind of horse or something. It's coming straight for the gates.
The tortured roar bounced off the houses.
Nobby, I don't think it's going to stop.
Corporal Nobbs threw himself flat against the wall. Colon, slightly more aware of the responsibilities of rank, waved his hands vaguely at the approaching light.
Don't do it! Don't do it!
And then picked himself up out of the mud. Rose petals, feathers, and sparks fell softly around him. In front of him, a hole in the gates sparkled blue around the edges.
That's old oak, that is, he said vaguely. I just hope they don't make us pay for it out of our own money. Did you see who it was, Nobby?
Nobby?
Nobby edged carefully along the wall.
He had a rose in his teeth, Sarge. Yes, but would you recognize him if you saw him again?
Nobby swallowed.
If I didn't, Sarge, he said, it'd have to be one hell of an identity parade. I don't like this, Mr. Glod. I don't like this. Shut up and steer. But this isn't the kind of road you're supposed to go fast on. That's all right. You can't see where you're going anyway.
The cart went around a corner on two wheels. It was starting to snow, a weak, wet snow that melted as soon as it hit the ground.
But we're back in the hills. There's a drop down there. We'll go over the side. You want Chrysoprase to catch us? Giddy up, y'all!
Buddy and Cliff clung to the sides of the cart as it rocked from side to side into the darkness.
Are they still behind us?
Glod yelled.
Can't see anything, shouted Cliff. If you stop the cart, maybe we could hear something.
Yeah, but suppose we heard something really up close. Giddy up, yeah!
Okay, so how about if we threw the money out?
$5,000?
Buddy looked over the edge of the cart. Darkness with a certain gulch-like quality, a certain suggestion of depth, was a few feet from the side of the road. The guitar twanged gently to the rhythm of the wheels. He picked it up in one hand. Strange how it was never silent. You couldn't silence it even by pressing on the strings heavily with both hands. He tried. There was the harp beside it. The strings were absolutely silent.
"This is daft," shouted Glod from the front. "Slow down, you nearly had us over the side that time."
Asphalt hauled on the reins. The cart slowed, eventually to walking pace.
"That's better."
The guitar screamed. The note was so high that it hit the ears like a needle. The horses jerked nervously in the shafts and then shot forward again.
"Hold them! I am!"
Glod turned around, gripping the back of the seat.
"Throw that thing out!"
Buddy gripped the guitar and stood up, moving his arm back to hurl the thing into the gorge. He hesitated.
"Throw it out!"
Cliff got to his feet and tried to take the guitar.
"No!"
Buddy whirled it around his head and caught the troll on the chin, knocking him backwards.
"No! Glod, slow down!"
And a white horse was overtaking them. A hooded shape leaned over and grabbed the reins. The cart hit a stone and was airborne for a moment before crashing back down on the road. Ashfelt heard the splintering of posts as the wheels smashed into the fence, saw the traces snap, felt the cart swing around and stop. So much happened later that Glod never did tell anyone about the sensation he had, that although the cart had definitely wedged itself uncertainly on the edge of the cliff, it had also plunged on, tumbling over and over towards the rocks. Glod opened his eyes. The image tugged at him like a bad dream. But he'd been thrown across the cart as it skewed around, and his head was lying on the backboard. He was looking straight into the gorge. Behind him, wood creaked. Someone was holding onto his leg.
"Who's that?"
he whispered, in case heavier words would send the cart over.
"It's me, Ashfelt. Who's that holding onto my foot?"
"Me," said Cliff. "What are you holding onto, Glod?"
"Just something my flailing hand happened to snatch at," said Glod.
The cart creaked again.
"It's the gold, isn't it?" said Ashfelt. "Admit it, you're holding on to the gold."
"Idiot dwarf," shouted Cliff. "Let it go or we're going to die."
"Letting go of $5,000 is dying," said Glod.
"Fool, you can't take it with you."
Ashfelt scrambled for purchase on the wood. The cart shifted.
"It's going to be the other way round in a minute," he muttered.
"So who,"
said Cliff, as the cart sagged another inch,
"is holding Buddy?"
There was a pause while the three counted their extremities and attachments thereto.
I think he might have gone over," said Glod.
Four chords rang out. Buddy hung from a rear wheel, feet over the drop, and jerked as the music played an eight-note riff on his soul. Never age, never die, live forever in that one last white-hot moment when the crowd screamed, when every note was a heartbeat, burn across the sky. You will never grow old. They will never say you died. That's the deal. You will be the greatest musician in the world. Live fast, die young. The music tugged at his soul. Buddy's legs swung up slowly and touched the rocks of the cliff. He braced himself, eyes shut, and pulled at the wheel. A hand touched his shoulder.
"No."
Buddy's eyes snapped open. He turned his head and looked into Susan's face, and then up at the cart.
"What?"
he said, his voice slurred with shock. He let go with one hand and fumbled clumsily for the guitar strap, slipping it off his shoulder. The strings howled as he gripped the guitar's neck and flung it into the darkness. His other hand slipped on the freezing wheel, and he dropped into the gorge. There was a white blur. He landed heavily on something velvety and smelling of horse sweat. Susan steadied him with her free hand as she urged Binky upwards through the sleet. The horse alighted on the road, and Buddy slipped off into the mud. He raised himself on his elbows.
"You?"
"Me," said Susan. Susan pulled the scythe out of its holster. The blade sprang out. Snowflakes that fell on it split gently into two halves without a pause in their descent.
"Let's get your friends, shall we?"
There was a friction in the air, as if the attention of the world were being focused. Death stared into the future.
Oh, blast!
Things were coming apart. The librarian had done his best, but mere bone and wood couldn't take this sort of strain. Feathers and beads whirled away and landed smoking in the road. A wheel parted company from its axle and bounced away, shedding spokes as the machine took a curve almost horizontally. It made no real difference. Something like a soul flickered in the air where the missing pieces had been. If you took a shining machine and shone a light on it so that there were gleams and highlights, and then took away the machine but left the light... Only the horse's skull remained, that and the rear wheel, which spun in forks now only of flickering light and was smouldering. The thing whirred past Dibbler, causing his horse to throw him into the ditch and bolt. Death was used to travelling fast. In theory, he was already everywhere, waiting for almost anything else. The fastest way to travel is to be there already. But he'd never been this fast while going this slow. The landscape had often been a blur, but never while it was only 4 inches from his knees on the bends. The cart shifted again. Now even Cliff was looking down into the darkness. Something touched his shoulder.
"Hang on to this, but don't touch the blade!"
Buddy leaned past.
Glod, if you let go of the bag, I can...
Don't even think about it.
There's no pockets in a shroud, Glod.
You got the wrong tailor, then.
In the end, Buddy grabbed a spare leg and hauled. One at a time, clambering over one another, the band eased themselves back onto the road and turned to look at Susan.
White horse, said Ashfeld. Black cloak. Scythe.
You can see her too, said Buddy.
I hope we're not going to wish we couldn't, said Cliff.
Susan held up a lifetimer and peered at it critically.
I suppose it's too late to cut some sort of a deal, said Glod.
I'm just looking to see if you're dead or not, said Susan.
I think I'm alive, said Glod.
Hold on to that thought,